Warning, this episode contains explicit content. Please proceed with caution. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Whiskey Sex Talk. We are your hosts, Romeo.
And Kim.
Kim.
Romeo.
We're back in session.
Hooray, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Even though this episode is going to air in March, we are recording in January because we love you guys so much.
Yes.
So, Kim, how was your holiday? How was your New Year, your holiday?
Oh, it was good. It was good. I basically was had a lot of whiskey jobs near the end of the year, so that was fun for me.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that you were actually prepping towards the end of season four. You were already prepping for a lot of stuff that you were going to be hosting.
Yes, so I was prepping for a lot of events. I mean, it was very fun, always very fun for me to do a lot of private tastings and corporate tastings.
Well, I can tell you this. I'm pretty sure that you being the hostess, people gained a lot of information. Because I remember when I first met you that one night at Bar Jackalope, you had so much to give. You're so informative. I love the way you deliver the information when it comes to whiskey. And I'm pretty sure your events were probably packed. You know, when people talk about whiskey, like, it can get heavy and you're just like, whoa. You know, I like, come on, just give me the information. Tell me things that I can connect with. Make it relatable. Don't talk down to me.
Well, that's what people It's been people should enjoy whiskey. It shouldn't be relegated to people who think they know a lot more than anybody else. And that's what I see my job is, helping people to become informed, and empowered, drinkers and imbibers and consumers.
So, oh man. Amen.
I love talking about whiskey, obviously, as you know, Romeo.
Yeah, you do. And you know, I'm excited for today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, because Kim is going to be telling us about Norwegian whiskey.
Well, I was just going to say, well, of course, you know, we're continuing from, you know, our Scandinavian whiskey journey because our last episode was Swedish whiskey. So we're kind of continuing on from there.
Yes, we're continuing on our world tour or global tour of all the different types of whiskey that does exist on this planet. And like Kim said, we're picking up where we left off in season four, which we were, when the last episode of season four was Swedish whiskey. And now Kim is going to be talking about Norwegian whiskey. So Kim, where did whiskey distilling in Norway start? Let's go there.
So Norwegian whiskey, our listeners may remember from our episode about Swedish whiskey that there was a government monopoly on selling alcohol over a certain ABV, certain proof. And the same thing was true in Norway. There was a strong temperance movement. I mean, Norway and Sweden, for that matter, there's a lot of aquavit, which is a different water of life than we know as whiskey. So it was basically a gin-like a substance, you know, neutral spirit flavored right. with, mainly flavored with caraway and dill. So there's a distilling history in Norway, but people couldn't really become distillers, independent distillers, for quite a while because of this government monopoly. So the first real distillery, independent distillery, was Det Norske Reneri, and they created Norway's first single malt. And it wasn't until 2005 that they were really kind of operational and releasing whiskey. So before that, the government agency, Arcus, kind of broke off from that, but they're kind of like a very large company that makes all different kinds of whiskeys. It's not like what we know as a distillery where, you know, they're focused on one thing, and it's kind of a big, you know, big monopoly. So,
you know, what I find interesting about all of this is that I think from the little that I know is that like Norway has like a complicated relationship with alcohol due to the social and health related issues in the past.
Right.
Which I think you just mentioned that they have a very strict government control. There's high taxes on alcohol beverages and whatnot. And I find that even despite all of this, they have a very, very rich history from what you're telling us right now.
Right. For distilling of aquavit, which is, you know, used for, you know, huge amounts of celebration. And of course, beer. And people have been, you know, distilling gin for a while, as many distillers do, because as we've discussed in the past, if you're starting a whiskey distillery, you have to age your whiskey. So, but gin doesn't have to be aged, nor does aquavit. So you can start selling it right away. So when you're aging whiskey, you're basically, I like to say, you're putting money in a barrel for three years or more. So
you're putting it in like a CD account per se. Barrel.
Well, you know, it's going to, you're pretty sure with this that something great is going to come out of it, right. Rather than somebody running away with your money. But considering how recent whiskey distilling has been going on in Norway, there's a pretty, you know, there's a small but very robust industry of whiskey distilling. I'd mentioned Det Norske Brenneri, which is the first single malt. They produce the first single malt. And Audney is kind of what they're famous for right now, Audney, single malts. But they also do a blend, and they, you know, have had some other you know, whiskeys in the past. This is the thing about Norway. They have the distillery name, and then they have the line of whiskey names, and it can be very confusing. And then some of them change names for various reasons. So if you're looking up Norwegian whiskey, prepare to, if you're perplexed, it's not you, it's the Norwegian whiskey industry. And, you know, here's the thing, even though the government supposedly, you know, you can buy whiskey from the government, you can't buy it that many other places in the world. So there's like Norway, Sweden, you know, the Scandinavian countries, UK, I think Germany, Netherlands, and Japan, but not the US at all. I mean, it's very hard to get a lot of these whiskeys that we're going to be talking about.
I'm curious.
You might be able to get them through.
No, I was going to say, because I live in Israel, so I was just thinking along the terms of, like, I wonder if it's available here, because there's whiskey brands that I've seen here. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just kind of want to throw in a little bit what I've experienced here in Israel is that there's brands I actually don't even recognize. And hopefully us going through world whiskeys and all these different whiskeys from all over the world, hopefully I'll be exposed, and somehow that will unlock, like, that's the bottle I saw over there. So let me, I apologize. You were saying,
I was pretty much finished, but, I was just saying that if you are looking for these whiskeys in your own country, unless you live kind of in that belt that used to be kind of called the vodka belt, because, you know, obviously Norway also, you know, produced vodka as part of the vodka belt. But, you know, it might be hard to find. I was just going to say the Whiskey Exchange, which is based in the UK, I have seen Norwegian whiskeys there. So, and it's whiskey without the E, so WHISKY exchange. And they often have a lot of these foreign whiskeys that we've been talking about, whether French or Swedish or Norwegian. But what's, you know, what's kind of disappointing is, you know, I think a lot of us who do whiskey jaunts, you know, my husband always says, you know, Kim will go anywhere as long as she can visit a distillery.
I love that. I love that. Because, you know, it just it makes it an adventure, like an interesting adventure.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, to me, the distillery visit is the point, not the bonus. But you know, the thing is, a lot of people like to go to distilleries because they can get distillery exclusives.
Yes,
and you can't do that at Norwegian whiskey distilleries. They can't sell you whiskey. So,
well, that fucking sucks, because the whole point of going to distilleries is to tour the distillery, taste the whiskeys, and get your hands on those bottles you will not find anywhere else but at the distilleries. That's like going to Disneyland, then the park telling you, sorry guys, you won't be able to take home souvenirs with you. However, despite that reality, I do want to say this. Wherever you are, if there's like a whiskey club, I highly recommend our listeners to actually join a whiskey club, because me and Kim met at Bar Jackal, which is a specific like whiskey club, and they themselves actually send out like their reps to all these distilleries, and they have like these special bottles that you can buy to join the members only whiskey bar / club. Anyhow, no offense to Norwegian distilleries, but that kind of sucks, because the whole point of going to distilleries, the fact that you can get specific bottles that are you could only get there and nowhere else. Now, Kim, I did want to kind of ask you, and you mentioned it briefly, what are the main Norwegian whiskey distillers? Or is it only those two?
Well, no, there's a few, and there's more coming along. I would say I mentioned Arcus, but that's kind of like a big distillery. It just makes a lot of different kinds. It's kind of almost like a factory distillery. It's not what we think of as you know, kind of. It's not necessarily these others aren't craft distilleries necessarily, but they're dedicated distilleries, whereas Arcus is a little bit bigger and a little bit more. It was basically when they seized the monopoly, the government monopoly, they kind of set Arcus up to, you know, create whiskey. But despite much, hues and cries and upset by the temperance movement in Norway, they were like, people are going to die if more people buy whiskey. So very dramatic over there in Norway. But so some of the other distilleries are, I mentioned Det Norske Brenneri, Mikkel Distillery, and that's spelled D-I-S-T-I-L-L-E-R-I, and it's Mikkel with a Y, M-Y-K-E-N. And this is the first Arctic whiskey. So the distillery is actually located above in the Arctic Circle. So, and there's the first whiskey to, you know, first Arctic whiskey. And they're on an island. It's a very small island. During peak times on the island, it's mainly fishing is the industry before Mikkel came in. There's like 15 people on the island. But
wow.
Mikkel came in. There was a group of a dozen people. They're kind of known as the Mikkel Dozen, and it was six couples. And they just decided that they were going to give up their jobs and they were going to move to Mikkel and this island, this little remote island, and start a whiskey distillery and retire there. So, you know, one of the things they say is it's a great place to age whiskey and people. So it's basically their retirement plan. Because they're on an island, they don't have not some islands have a water source, you know, fresh water source, but they don't. So they use desalinated seawater, ocean water. You would think, oh my gosh, it's got to be freezing up there. But because of the Gulf Stream, it's, you know, keeps it somewhat temperate. Right. So, but the water is basically, the sea is just kind of lapping up against the distillery walls. I can't even imagine what it's like in a storm, but they did a really good job of setting it up. And, their whiskeys, and they're all called Mikkel whiskeys. That's one of the few places where the name of the distillery and the name of the whiskeys are the same. But they've, you know, been very well received. They've produced a lot. The first whiskey was in 2017, and they've produced a lot of whiskey since then. Very well received. Another one is the Aurora Spirit Distillery, And they are also really interesting. They are not on an island, but they are on the coast. So, and they took over this fort that was used first by the Germans in World War II and then by NATO. So there was this whole, wow, you know, and they just kind of took it over. And, you know, everything was set up, the electrical, the water, right, you know, everything. And it's right by the Lingen, I think it's how you pronounce it, Alps. And a lot of tourists come. And so there's a glacial runoff that, nice, you know, there's a lot of abundant, you know, kind of mineral rich water, because you want the mineral rich water,
right,
mineral rich water helps the yeast, you know. And but it's interesting, a lot of these Norwegian distilleries don't use Norwegian, well, some of them use Norwegian barley, but it tends to be very protein rich, which is not always good for, you know, interaction. You want more starch. So, but they are, what Aurora is doing, I think it's really interesting. Their line is called Bivrost, and it means, so they're very high up, you know, they're actually the northernmost distillery in the world. So they're even higher, you know, further north than Myken, which I just, you wow, know, which I just remembered. So Myken was the first Arctic Circle. And then Aurora is even higher than that. So they, and that, you know, so they were obviously a strategic place. But anyway, so they are, you know, releasing their own whiskeys. But in the meantime, they've released about two a year. They're doing one-offs of whiskeys commemorating the nine Norse regions, and they're kind of legend. So,
that's nice.
I know we always talk about, you know, whiskeys to look out for. So those are, if you can find them, those are whiskeys that I would definitely recommend keeping an eye out for. They've been well received. And one of the ones I personally would like to get my hands on is Helheim. And it's kind of just what it sounds like. The picture of it, there's this horrible, like, hag who is, she's like dripping, her teeth are dripping. She's like guarding the gates of hell. But it's just a great story. And it's a peated whiskey, which, you know, I love so much.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So they've released about six out of the nine whiskeys. So that's a line to look out for. So I would say those are some of the big three. You know, those are probably the big three.
Now you covered a lot right now, and thank you so much for giving us that, because I feel that, like, for people who travel and want to and love whiskey and want to explore and discover new distilleries, I think from what you're telling me, Norwegian whiskey is the way to go to visit those distilleries. Now, I do want to ask you this, because you mentioned a couple of things that I want you to kind of go a little bit deeper. Are there characteristics unique to Norwegian distilleries?
Well, here's the Norwegian distillers. I think they're trying to, generally speaking, kind of create, probably, I would say, like a whiskey that's kind of in the Highland vein, and peated whiskeys. They all seem to be kind of interested in that, but they are not necessarily trying to replicate Scottish whiskeys. They're kind of doing single malts kind of in the same way. But, you know, that's very, even though the climate is somewhat similar in terms of cool and, you know, for instance, I mentioned Aurora, because it's so cold up there, they have to use very small casks, you know, to, otherwise it would just be, you know, the distilling would like be very, very slow, even though it's climate, you know, controlled way down in these bunkers. But one of the characteristics that I've noticed in a lot of these distilleries is they are somehow close to the ocean. So I haven't heard that necessarily. I mean, I've heard distillers say, I think there is going to be an influence of the sea on the whiskey. I mean, you know, there kind of has to be, unless, you know, maybe not for Aurora because that's aging underground. But I mean, some of these other distilleries, I think it's going to have to affect it. But a lot of the Norwegian distillers are, if the whiskey scene is so young, I think a lot of them are saying, you know, we're going to just let the whiskey, you know, Nordic whiskey figure out what it's going to be on on its own. You know, we're not going to try and lead it in one direction. That said, they are kind of dedicated to using interesting oak, you know, wooden casks. And some of the casks, you know, a lot of the, you know, casks that whiskey is aged in usually held something else before. And some of them, some of the distilleries are using aquavit, which is maybe a dill or a caraway flavor. So
interesting. I do like, I think you mentioned this earlier. What I do like is the fact that you say that they had the, as far as like they use local ingredients and adhere to like local, you know, like barley and all that stuff, which I think to me that just, I love that they're not importing barley from elsewhere or, you know, like some other, I think in the past you've covered that not everybody uses like local barley, like they source it out. And I love that because it just adds more to like the richness of what is and what makes Norwegian whiskey. Now, let me ask you another question, clearly. Does Norwegian whiskey have like a specific, like, or a special taste profile?
Well, not really at this point, I don't think. I mean, I think that generally speaking, they're kind of in the model is more Scottish whiskey than I would say, you know, like the Swedish distillers. I think people remember our last episode, whiskey episode. They were doing all kinds of crazy things. And I think the Norwegians are not being quite as they're not being quite as not crazy, but you know, the Swedes, I think, are really priding themselves on all, you know, all kinds of innovative experiments. Whereas I don't think the Norwegian distilleries are, and I don't think that's because of fear of innovation. I think it's, you know, it's just very challenging, you know, just to try and make whiskeys based on where they are. I mean, there's a lot of island distilleries. There's a couple of other distilleries, you know, that are kind of up and coming. And one of them is called Fetty Distillery. It's also on an island. So I think that, you know, the challenge of having to deal with, you know, that kind of so much sea is, kind of a big enough challenge as it is. And I will say that what's interesting about the Norwegian distillers is I think they are letting the whiskey, instead of trying to force it in one direction or the other, they are kind of letting the whiskey figure out its, you know, determine what it's going to be, as opposed to like, we're going to aggressively steer it in this direction or that direction. So, I mean, of course, the choice of casks, you know, to age things in is going to affect it, but they're not as trying to do as many crazy experiments as interesting, you know, but kind of out of the box experiments as like a lot of the Swedish distillers are.
That's so interesting. Cause you would think, cause you know, the country has a diverse climate, and you would think that they would somehow, like, in my view, I would think like they would have a diverse range of flavor profiles, you know, and I'm talking about like going from light to the fruity, to the rich, to the spicy, you know, reflecting kind of like what the environment is, but you're saying that they're just really adhering to really, I'm not trying to say that they're boxed, they're very like, this is the way you do it. I just thought that they had a little bit more of like an experimental like spirit to their approach.
Yeah, I think they are, you know, I think where they are experimenting is in using casks. I mean, you know, they're not like, we're just going to put it in a boring cask and see what happens. You know, they're sourcing a lot of different casks, you know, and slash barrels. I mean, you know, they call, you may remember in Europe, they say, please don't call it barrels. They're called casks. So I think they're importing a lot of interesting casks. They're using sherry casks, they're using bourbon casks, they're using rum casks. So I think they're, you know, doing experiments that way. It's not like they're just, we're going to put it in a barrel and see what happens.
But that alone itself, like, it adds like layers of complexity in the flavor variation. Like just that. I mean, I'm just imagining like, you know, just even you talking about like these bottles from one of those distilleries, I was just like, I'm just so curious to see like, what is that all about? But anyway,
well, I can't wait to, I wish I could get my hands on some of those, you know, Bifrosts, you know, and oh, also this is like a great story. So the name of the whiskeys, the Bifrost, it means shaking road. And what that refers to is the Aurora Borealis, you know, which is always shifting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the Norse Vikings believed that was the road from Earth to heaven, or Asgard, as right. they called heaven. So it was like Valhalla. So that the Aurora Borealis was the shaking road to heaven for them.
You
so
gotta
I love
appreciate,
that.
Yeah, you gotta appreciate the fact that they're taking Norse mythology and incorporating mm-hmm. into kind of bringing out like their versions of bottles and different types of whiskeys. Now let's pivot here, because what I want to know, and I think kind of like a question I always like to ask, is talk about the women in Norwegian whiskey industry.
Well, you know, there was the Mike and Dozen, as they were called, as I referred to them earlier, that's the group of 12 people who moved to Mykin, you know, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Mykin, Island. And it wasn't just like, oh, there's six guys with, you know, who know how to do things. I mean, it was, my understanding is that the whole group, you know, contributed. So you know, these six women, you know, really deserve to be, you know, recognized for, you know, what they did. And they were Trudy Tokel, Kirsten Mathenson, Marianne Valnes, Helga Eriksson, Anna Santro, and Anita Hooker Johansson. So Johansson. So which is kind of like my last name. So those are like the women of the you know, Mike and Six. And then I had mentioned Fetty Ocean Distillery.
Yes, you did.
And also on an island, 100% women investors. The founder and the principal shareholder is Anne Kopping, and Annette Mom-Justad is the chairwoman of the board. And they have two female distillers. And the relatively new whiskey distiller is Vicky Muir, M-U-I-R, Taylor. And they are expecting to release their first whiskey in autumn of this year. So that, of course, I am super excited to try.
And
I know. And you can invest in their casks. So, you know, anywhere from, I think it's like, you know, low 200s, I mean, in American and US dollars, low 200s to close to $400. And you get a share of the cask. So I love that.
I love that. And listen, Kim, we have to get all these women we've mentioned on the show from all these distilleries, because, you know, it goes back to we talked about it in season one, the role that women have played. And I just want to bring women, because they're so important. It's just because of what I've learned and what I'm seeing, that women, it's so interesting in this male dominated industry that is whiskey, women are still visible, and they've positioned themselves in these positions that you just would not imagine they would be in. And we got to start bringing these women in, you know. Hello, you're the president of Women in Whiskey, you know, of Los Angeles. I'm just, I love that.
I know. Well, you know, I think as soon as we get through, we're getting, I think, maybe not close to the end, but, you know, we're in maybe the last third of our global distillery.
Yes.
So, you know, we can then start bringing in more people. So,
awesome.
But yeah, I think, you know, there is a reason women tend to, as we've discussed before, have more educated palates and, you know, taste buds. So, and
thank you.
Olfactory.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to do this. So, Kim, what are your whiskey recommendations? Because we're towards the end of our recording session here.
Well, as I mentioned, I am really excited. I would love if you can find that Helheim. You know, whiskey from Bifrost, which with the hag, you know, who's guarding hell. That sounds really interesting. Smoky whiskey. And I just, you know, who doesn't want a bottle whiskey with a hag on it.
Yes.
I certainly do. And then there's also Mike and Solo PX Sherry 2020. It's a four-year-old whiskey. I think that might be available possibly through, at one point it was available through Whiskey Exchange. So I would seek that out. And I would say those two are kind of what, to me, some of the most interesting whiskeys out there.
All right, Kim, thank you so much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for today. We are your hosts, Romeo
and Kim.
Till next time, bye.
Bye.